The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Some believe Essendon was unlucky, but even most Bombers fans are looking past the controversial finish against Sydney and about where this club genuinely sits in the AFL landscape. We'll discuss the Dons and catch up with 203-game Hawk Ben Dixon for a chat about his old club and much more. Hello and welcome to the Fox Footy Podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as is Fox Footy's chief siren goalpost climber correspondent, Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Ben, hello to you. I don't agree with that initial statement. I don't think most Essendon fans are looking
I was listening to the talk back yesterday and a lot of Essendon fans are very despondent with what happened on Friday night give a stuff about the end of siren stuff.
Can you be equally despondent with the non-decision at the end of the game and with your club?
I think so, yes. But I think Essendon fans realise, though, that they shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. They should have gone up to Sydney, who are in pretty ordinary form at the moment, and knocked off the Swans at the SCG, considering their poor record at the SCG of late.
A lot is going wrong at Essendon at the moment. Mm. I look forward to dissecting that and unpacking it with this man.
Yes, it's great to welcome back into the podcast bunker, fresh from a Bali sojourn, Max Lawton. Selamat pagi, Max.
What?
Bike Saja.
Yeah, bike Saja. A little bit Indonesian. That's good.
My grade 5, grade 6 Indonesian really coming in handy.
Never been to Bali.
Doesn't sound like you would have used too much of that in Bali.
Absolutely zero of it. No, it was basically like being in a hot pran with all the Australian cafes that they have there.
Hot pran.
You're looking quite tan.
No, I'm not. I didn't.
You are.
I literally didn't step foot on a beach.
Well, maybe it's the green shirt you're wearing.
That's true. It's a very lovely colour, isn't it? This is great for podcasting as well.
It's great to have Max back.
It is great to have Max back. Were you aware of, you were back in the country, I assume, on Friday night when the goalpost fiasco post-gate was going down?
Shake-gate.
Yeah. That's what you came up
with,
didn't you?
That's what I coined it.
Is that like the shake weight?
I don't know what that is. It's a shake gate, though.
It's a weight thing that you make this motion with, and Tom's making a face at me. Anyone knows what the shake weight is knows what I'm talking
Never
about.
Make that motion ever again in front of me, Max.
That's good podcasting.
The G-rated podcast.
So, Tom, you were all sort of all on top of the story, certainly on Saturday morning. Yeah. Take us through sort of how you thought it went down.
Dane Rampey climbed the post.
Yes.
He was told...
While David Myers was kicking, the ball was in the air.
He was told to get down while the ball was in the air, and he promptly got down from the post. He got down from the post.
Okay.
Just let me finish. Right. The post was shaking. David Myers' shot fell short. Mm. Dane Rampey, the siren then went, and Essendon players argued with the umpire.
Jean Fagner.
Former Melbourne rookie.
Yes.
And then when John Longmire came out on the ground, we saw an AFL 360 last night that Dane Rampey told him what had happened. And if you could lip read, as we all could, John Longmire said that should have been a free kick, or that was a free kick, or words to that effect. Now, no one saw this on the broadcast until after the press conference. So John Longmire wasn't asked about it, and John Worsfold wasn't asked about it. Now, that's a crucial point. And when it was broadcast on the free-to-air broadcaster at the time, it was very late and sort of just lit up social media probably at about 11:30 or 12.
Yeah, almost an hour after the final siren.
It did. Was it a free kick? People were posting their thoughts. Essendon fans were filthy. Early on Saturday morning, I called Hayden Kennedy and said, Hayden, was this the right call, the wrong call?
Hayden Kennedy being?
The head of the umpires.
Yes.
Yep. Hayden Kennedy is a very experienced former umpire. He umpired over 400 games.
Yep.
Stood firm and said, no, the correct call was made. And he didn't expand on that too much. And then it dominated the talk for the next, until now, really,
yes,
hasn't it?
Essentially.
Whether it should have been a free kick. And the next thing that happened, actually, was on Saturday afternoon, I was driving along Ben and Max, and I listened to Gil McLaughlin on, in no particular order, on 3AW, SCN, ABC, and Triple M.
All four.
And back to back to back to back. Like no team has done since Collingwood in the 1920s. And finished in 1930.
They always call Gil the machine.
They do. And Gil McLaughlin defended the umpire for not making the call. He said that the AFL stands by the umpire and effectively gave it the tick of approval. Now, there's two problems with this,
yes,
Max. Mm. Number one is I don't think it should have got the tick of approval. Mm. In fact, I think the AFL's decision to give it the tick of approval is worse than Jan Fagner's original non-decision. I can absolutely understand why an umpire would not give it in that situation.
At the time.
It's a split-second call. It's bizarre. It's not something you think about. And you just look and go, I don't want to be the man who decides the game right now. That is wrong in my opinion, but I can understand why Jan Fagner made that call. But then the umpires and the AFL coming out and saying it was correct not to make the call, to me, is baffling. And I thought Gil McLachlan, with all due respect to the man, was pretty poor on radio. He hadn't seen the incident, and if he had seen the incident, he hadn't looked closely enough.
He was saying that David Myers hadn't kicked when it happened, wasn't he?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people say, you don't want something like this to decide the game. But if you don't want something like this to decide the game, then you're not paying any free kicks, because any free kick could potentially have a massive impact on the game. Jim Steins ran through the mark in the late 1980s. Mm. A 15-metre penalty was the follow-on, and it cost Melbourne a final. Now, no one says the umpire made a mistake there. That was Jim Steins' error. And the same thing, I think, would have happened here. There would have been a debate about the umpiring initially, but then it would have gone to, why did Dane Rampey do it?
And why is this a rule?
Why is this a rule? To me, the whole situation is baffling based on the AFL's response.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It sounded like Gil, yes, hadn't watched the footage or just wasn't well briefed either by someone else or himself.
It's up to him to brief himself.
Yeah, that was confusing in that sense. What gets lost here a little bit is, why the heck Dane Rampey did it when the guy was 60 metres out and David Myers is a long kick but probably was never going to really make the distance. What was sort of going through his mind on that occasion? Because wobbling the goalpost is actually quite off-putting. That sort of hasn't been talked about too much. If you're lining up for goal and you've got a certain target and then you've got this post wobbling, that is quite off-putting. Hence why I think there is a big penalty if a player ever does that. The last player I think I can remember doing that was Dustin Fletcher back in 2001 against North Melbourne there. So I can understand the hefty penalty.
So the argument from Jared Waitley on AFL 360 last night was the debate and the furore would have been tenfold had they given the free kick.
Yep.
Does that excuse it as a decision? As the AFL ticking it off, though?
No, it doesn't excuse it as a decision, but it makes it... I understand why Jan Fagner didn't give the decision. As much as I don't agree with it, I understand why he didn't. But the AFL had time to think about it. Yeah, the AFL had time to think about it, and they still ticked it off.
And also then on Monday to request a please explain from Dane Rampey and ask what he's doing, and he's going to get some sort of warning, we believe, and then fined for the sledge, which was a worse thing that he said.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah.
So without getting too heavy, because it's been covered a lot, but without getting too heavily into it, the intentional shaking of the post wording in the laws of the game, I think people are completely misreading that sentence.
Mm.
To me, that is intentionally shaking the post refers to someone bumping into the post and it shaking and accidentally bumping into the post.
Yes.
That is not intentional and therefore not a free kick. If you intentionally climb the post, the onus is on you not to shake it. Just like if you intentionally bump, the onus is on you not to get someone high. And since the post did shake here, it should have been a free kick. It should have been a 50-metre penalty.
Yeah, it was an intentional act which resulted in the shaking.
Yeah.
Thus the intent.
Yeah, but...
essentially, this is the same if someone had King hit someone off the ball at the exact same time at the other end of the ground.
Yeah.
No impact on the kick.
Nope.
But illegal and a free kick. Mm. Yeah. And therefore something has to be done, right?
Yeah. Yes, there is. The argument that it's common sense or practical, to use Gil McLachlan's words, I also think is laughable, because if it's common sense, then it's universally agreed upon, I would have thought. For example, it's common sense to, I don't know, not hurt someone.
Yes.
That is a universally agreed thing, I would have thought, to not cause harm on others, by and large.
Then I guess no one's ever getting suspended again, because no one's going to hurt anyone. Why would you?
You know what I'm saying, though?
Yes.
This is not universally agreed upon. In fact, it's polarising. Therefore, common sense is out the window. To me, and I don't like to bring up cricket too much on this podcast, Ben, but the Mancad debate from a couple of months ago in the IPL reminds me of this. There are laws of the game that are set up for these types of situations, and when they don't suffice, then maybe you use common sense. But in this case, the laws of the game suffice perfectly.
Now, there's a question that we won't use in the mailbag. I'll bring it up now from Grace, who asked, why doesn't Essendon appeal this and try and get the result overturned?
Yeah, that can't happen.
No. Well, apparently someone was saying might have been Robbo said on AFL 360 last night that they'd been having discussions with the AFL.
Seeking clarity
about this. So it was never their intention to try and overturn the result of the game. But seeking clarity kind of ticks the box that they were doing something about it. But then Robbo at the same time said Essendon can be a soft and a weak club in a situation like this.
Well, you can't overturn the game because David Myers, as point blank as it is, still has to execute the final kick.
Yeah, it's not Siren Gate from Hawthorn Fremantle.
No, it's Essendon. Not.
It's a different situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the AFL should be embarrassed with the way they handled it on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think that the commentary, I think, has been pretty reasonably universal about how the league has handled it, and hopefully a few learnings to come from that. So that topic was outside of fair or fast because Tom thought it was above fair or fast.
That's literally what he said to us.
Which is unusual for Tom to sort of downplay his segment that much. But now on the Fox Footy podcast, it is time for Australia's favourite segment, fair or fast.
There's no paper. I'm holding a pen to the. I don't know what I'm doing.
Matt, just give us a song. Fair or fast? Like that.
Fair or fast.
There we go. Nice. All right. Fair or fast. Ben, Brian Taylor trolled us all with Fantasia's surname.
Oh, gosh. So you're asking this to me instead of Max?
Yep.
Wowee. I'm looking forward to Max's retort.
Yeah, I won't comment on it. Don't worry.
No, I think that's. I think. What was the question? That he trolled all of us?
Yeah.
No, I think that's a farce. I think
is that suggesting that it was intentional what he said just to rile people?
That's
up?
What I'm suggesting.
Yeah, I think that's a farce. I think Brian's had his own way and sort of created his own, not legacy, but sort of cult figure status around this. He's been running it for so long as well. So I don't think he deliberately tried to rile people up. He'd been doing this for a while. But whether it is disrespectful to Fantasia, which is where I hand all over to Max to get on his high horse here, is another question.
Yeah, so what happened was Aratia came out yesterday on Monday and said that he just says Fantasia. Now, my read of that is that it's the same way that people with difficult to say or perhaps less anglicised names say at coffee shops. You just say John or something because it's a lot easier to have that written down. And he said he doesn't want to have to explain Fantasia to every person at an airport when he was talking about that. So the disrespect comes from BT's original contention that he was not going to say Fantasia because he has to – we Australianise names here. Which is not something that we do because you don't say cappuccino or something like that. You say things
cappuccino
the Italian way that you would say them because we're borrowing those words into our language. So it's disrespectful if the intent of the person is to say, well, no, this is how you say my name. Please say it correctly. And BT saying, nah, we won't because it's Australia.
Okay.
That's where you're getting a little bit offensive.
That's not what's happened here, though.
No, but at the time, that's what it looked like because Fantasia had said, no, it's Fantasia.
Okay.
So BT was responding to that point of view with, in my opinion, an offensive way of responding.
I understand that. So the timing of these comments are crucial.
Yeah, really important. So he addressed it on Triple M on Saturday after it had all gone down and Dyson Heppel had given commentators and fans the heads up about that and then Brian explained it in that tone.
Yeah, so at this point he can say Fantasia. That's totally fine because RITO doesn't care. But if his contention is that I'm going to say things how I like, it reminds me of the Lucy Zelich stuff. From the World Cup, when she was saying names in their native tongue, the way that they would be said by the native speakers of those languages.
Yeah.
And people got all up in arms about it, which was sort of the reverse of this.
Yeah,
she's being incredibly respectful, and people were bothered by it. So to me, it's a bothersome thing, and it's one of those things that we don't want to talk too much about BT as a commentator, but he does things for his or others' entertainment that perhaps other people who are looking for footy commentary don't enjoy.
Interesting, Ben.
I'll just say that.
Yeah. Offence is in the eye of the beholder, and just like
usually in the eye of the victim.
Sorry, that's right, the victim.
Yes.
In this case, if Arazio Fantasia doesn't want to be, doesn't care, then call him Arazio Fantasia. Whose go is it? Max. Jeez, it feels like you just had that, Max.
Yeah, weird.
Two in a row. Max, fair or farce? Sarah's performance over the past fortnight made you very nervous returning to this podcast.
Oh, look, Sarah has TV shows, she's on Triple M Radio now as well. She's got enough hats, all right? Okay. I need one. This is my one hat. Let me have it, please.
Very good response. Hello to Sarah out there. Ben, fair or farce? Smiling after a loss is an insult to members.
No, that's a farce. I can understand the Essendon furor around it, though. It really has split people down the middle.
Because it was vehement initially.
Yeah, it was. But when you look at the footage in its full capacity, it lasted 1 second, and the split frame, the screenshot looked pretty damning. And then it didn't help that when Paul Roos from the old school felt so strongly about it and blew it up. I think it's a bit of a farce.
I haven't seen the live footage. Was he just saying to David Myers about the kick? essentially.
He explained it on SEN on Monday morning, saying he was just trying to, you know, get around his teammate. He said it would have been worse if he went to Myers and didn't say anything or gave him the cold shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think the modern day player would probably prefer Heppel's approach rather than the cold shoulder.
Yeah. What's he going to do? Say, no, you stuff that up.
Do you disagree? I get the feeling you slightly disagree.
Well, no, because I refer to my Essendon friends who hated it.
Yeah.
And they're the one, just like what we spoke about, the offence is taken.
Yes.
And the victim isn't the right word in this case, by the beholders.
Yes, I understand that.
The Essendon fans hated it.
Mm.
So if they hated it, then the players, I don't think, should be doing it. In saying that, I spoke to former VFL player Gus Borthwick.
Oh, Gus
Borthwick. Saturday. Very good man.
Yes.
Playing in the VAFA. And he asked me about it. And I said exactly that. Look, I said, I don't really care, but I feel sorry. And I don't think I'd care if my team did it either. But I know a lot of Essendon members hate it. They really vehemently were against it. And Gus said, that all you need to do is do your absolute best, siren to siren, and whatever happens outside of that, the first siren and the last siren is whatever. And that got me thinking about a mentality in footy when I played more, Ben.
Oh, yes.
And in sport in general. You have some coaches and some people that can't understand why you could have a laugh in among a sporting game. How can you be smiling 20 minutes before a match, a coach said to me once. And everyone approaches games differently.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of going back on what I initially said, but what Dyson Heppel and David Myers did, I don't think affects the way they play whatsoever.
And I don't think it affects the way that they react or feel after the loss.
No, I don't think it does either. And by the same token, there'd also be people, I think Gary Lyon might have said it, where they would feel as if they had to look shattered because of the result of the game. And that's not authentic in itself. I think it's a more complex issue than anything because the way you emotionally react to certain situations can be misconstrued completely. And I think this is probably a case of that. And I'm sort of, in answer to your question, I'm sitting on the fence.
Right.
I feel sorry for the Essendon members who don't like it, but I also know that Dyson Heppel and David Myers, it has no impact on the way they're going to play footy.
You do understand when you're a passionate fan, you want to see that passion reflected by your players. So I'd look at Joel Embiid, the Philadelphia 76ers player. They lost a very exciting Game 7 to the Toronto Raptors in the NBA earlier this week. Embiid was in tears coming off the court. A grown man crying, and to see that was confronting in a way, but that shows how much he cared, how important that was to him. And fans adored him for that because that showed how much it mattered to him. So that's the flip side where that's what people want to see, but that's not what your reaction is, then you can't force that.
Yeah.
It's just,
and haven't we come a long way? Max Hutchton cried after a game 15 years ago and copped a lot of criticism for that, or 20 years ago.
Mm.
Max.
No, Ben.
No.
No, Max.
No, Max. Fair or farce. We've never seen a world sporting week like last week with two Champions League thrillers and the NBA yesterday.
Well, I can't say that I know every week off the top of my head, but it was rather good, wasn't it? Yeah.
So fair.
Fair.
Okay, good.
Reasonably good.
Ben.
Yes.
Mother's Day football is dead in Melbourne. Fair or farce?
No, that's a farce. I think it was poorly fixed in a new, but did some nice follow-up work with Hawthorn Chief Executive Justin Reeves yesterday on this, Thomas. I don't think... even if the Giants played on Saturday against Hawthorn in the 1:45 time slot, how much bigger would the crowd have been in that time slot? Would it maybe an extra 10, 15, maybe upwards of 30? But I think the fixture, the nature of it in the afternoon, it might have even been worse if it was at night, actually, really.
Yeah.
No, that's a farce.
It's a tough situation for them because they understand that their point of view. But when you have 80K members and you're getting 15K people there, there were over 40,000 people at the G last year, Sunday 3:20. Collingwood, Geelong, bigger audiences, but still Geelong people travelling from Geelong, a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic that we have high expectations for crowd numbers as well.
Yeah.
But as Jared Waitley said yesterday, it's nice to watch it on the telly, and every game is live. We do sometimes forget that when we look at crowd numbers.
We're one of the few sports where the live experience still keeps crowd numbers super high. Around the world, you see numbers in attendance declining because of that.
Max, last one to you. Fair or farce? And I've accidentally deleted my note, so I've got to remember.
So you're working off the top of your head here.
Yeah, fair or farce?
Try your best.
The North Melbourne versus Sydney Swans result will directly impact the way our country approaches climate change for the next 3 years.
It's completely fair, Tom, because that's what's going to happen. As you see that The Swans, when they play on election day since 1951, it's happened five times, and every time their result has reflected the result of the federal election. When they win, Labor wins. When they lose, the Liberals or the Coalition win. So
it's how Sydney Swans go, or South Melbourne back in the day.
Yes, exactly. So 2016, they lost by a kick after the siren, Jason Johannesson, to the Western Bulldogs, and the Liberals got up. 2010, they beat the Bulldogs, Labor got up. So the problem is, of course, that because of how election counting works, we might know the result before the end of the Roos Swans game on
the problem
on Fox 2503 from 7 PM Eastern on Saturday night.
So how many games have the Swans played on election day in that period?
So it's 1951. It's five since then, and three have gone one way, two the other. So that's not completely random. That's five coin flips.
And climate change is obviously a factor because of the way the Liberals and the Labor Party actually approach that delicate topic.
Yeah, one of them approaches them, one of them is doing other things.
Okay, well, no, let's not get political. Move along.
No, perhaps it will impact my tip, who I desire to win as who I think will win.
One of the more extraordinary versions of Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Fast. Well, a man who's going to be on the Fox Footy airwaves on Saturday night, not necessarily in the North Melbourne-Sydney game, but on the boundary for Essendon and Fremantle, is 203-game Hawthorn sharpshooter Ben Dixon, and he's been good enough to join us on the Fox Footy podcast. Hello, Dicko.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we?
Yeah, good mate. We're fantastic. Well. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. First up, I'm sure you would have watched with plenty of interest the Hawthorn and Alistair Clarkson masterclass on Sunday afternoon against the GWS Giants. How impressed with your former club were you?
Super impressed, because not only have they stopped them in their tracks at the MCG, but they just played them smart. It was just an outstanding coaching display. The Giants like to keep the ground nice and big and offer up a little bit of space so they can come back through, but Hawthorn, with their possession style, got their numbers back, just literally took their whole game away from them right from the get-go. So I wasn't surprised. And as you know, boys, when we tip with our head, not our heart. And I honestly thought they were going to win. And, you know, there's obviously a couple of dingbats out there like Wayne Carey that think, you know, it's just a boring style. And, you know, you can't be... I wouldn't pay to go watch that. Well, you don't have to pay, Wayne, because you play 300 games and you get free tickets, so just don't worry about it, all right? when we talk about a boring style, give me an absolute spell. It is just a masterclass, because if you watch the Easter Monday game, they played attacking, they weren't good enough, the form team's Geelong, the Bulldogs are attacking, so when you come up against the opposition, you can take away their game. Why wouldn't you do it? That's tactics. That's football. That's what we live for. That's what we eat. That's what we breathe.
It is what we breathe, and we absolutely love your passion for the Hawks as well. So I think what Wayne was really talking about was that the high level of marks that the Hawks took and the keepings off. But that's been a trademark of Alistair Clarkson's game style for quite some time, Dicko, as well. So can you see that the boring side of it at all?
Well, what's boring about it? Because West Coast do it. But what, because they won the premiership last year, no one just is all over that. They chip, they possess. They have 110 uncontested marks when they win, and they have 68 when they lose. Like, there's no other science to it. If you can control the footy and pick your hole through and you've got a good enough skill level to get through, then you play that style of play. If you can't do it, don't do it. You've got to find another way to get through or win the game of footy. So I thought it was outstanding. He cops the criticism because he's the best coach, and we know he's innovative and he knows how to win. So his system will beat any talent any day of the week. System and structure beats talent. Bottom line.
And Dicko, what one do you...
Oh, you're speechless, you blokes. Come on.
No, it just threw me a little bit there. No, I want to ask you about goal kicking, because one of the main criticisms of the modern day game is that despite all the other improvements around the sport, goal kicking, if anything, has regressed. At probably best, it's plateaued. Why can't AFL players kick more goals and behinds on a regular basis, year on year, game on game?
Well, it's not why they can't. It's,
well, why don't they? It's,
well, exactly. Why don't they? And it comes down to, well, there's a lot of, I don't know how long your podcasts go for, gentlemen, but
you go for it, mate.
There's lots in it, to be brutally honest. Like, you got to put the work in, you got to put the time in, you got to critique it, you got to review it, refine it. So it's not as simple as, oh, I get in front of goal and, you know, I've just got to pull the trigger. Like, a midfielder walks down and then he walks nice and straight, you know, because he goes, oh, goal kicking now, I've got to keep myself straight. Well, no, you don't. When you field kick, you got a little arc in your kick. So bring that into it. Like, you've got to be comfortable with what you've got from a routine, but it's got to be the same. And good goal kickers can critique themselves. So if they do miss one, they go, that's right, I didn't start my support leg. That's my trigger. That's what I didn't do. So they have the next shot, bang, they hit it. So you know a guy who's very comfortable, who's got a sound routine and who practices at a level that they can throughout the week, obviously depending on high performance and where they're at. But the shots are there. They can have the shots. They've just got to be able to put the time and effort in and get something as consistent as they can. And I can't speak for other clubs because I'm not at other clubs. But if they're not doing that, then they're doing a disservice to the boys you're writing out the checks for that kick the goals, because you spend so much time on your offense, so much time on your defense, so much time on transition, so much time on, you know, this part of the game we've got to defend, this one we've got to do this. But you know what you've got to do? You've got to kick goals at the end of it. So all that hard work through the preseason and through the week, you might as well just light it up and let it go, because if you can't finish your work, you're not there. You're not going to be able to kick the scores and win the games of footy. So that's one of the most important skills in the game. And I don't know if the attention's at the level it should be in a professional organisation. And we are the biggest vehicle in sport in Australia. And I think we are the pioneers in a lot of ways, but somewhat we're amateurs in a lot of ways as well.
So if I want to be a key forward and I'm on an AFL list, how many shots at goal should I be having a week? What do you have, is there a number, or is it much more complex than that?
Oh, it's more complex than that. It's when you say a number, like, you can't go, right, we need to have 200 shots. Well, what the hell are you doing with those 200 shots?
Yeah.
It might be as simple as, you know, I'm coming out to do 10 quality or 15 quality, depending on where you're at, body-wise. Everyone's different. Like, when you do weights at a footy club or you're doing high-performance running in pre-season, no one's got the same program. Everyone's got a different program. You come in, your name's got next to it, 4x200, and then you've got XYZ. And Tom Morris comes in and goes, you've only got 2x200 and then XYZ. Everything's different. So goal kicking's no different to anyone else. Like, I need a lot of work and I can afford to kick a lot. Come in and get your shots done. Nah, I'm only limited to be able to do this amount of work. Well, let's make it quality. What are we getting out of that quality session and how many shots you're going to have? So some guys can have 300 or 400 shots a week. Other guys might only have 50, but get the same thing out of it. Mm.
Dicko, you're working the Bombers-Dockers game on the weekend, as Benny mentioned off the top. Two disappointing teams from the weekend, the Bombers on Friday night and Fremantle losing to an injury-ravaged Richmond. What do you make of those two teams at the moment, who have looked really good at times this year, but have also looked pretty bad?
Yeah, and everyone's talking about Essendon. Their biggest weapon is the ability to score off halfback. They don't want to do that. They want to score in the front half. They want to lock the ball in. They've got the talent there to do that, albeit that they've probably got some people out this weekend that's going to make it difficult. But they want to have the ball in their half, their forward half, and create the opportunity. That's their game. They like to build a little bit of pressure. But what we're seeing is, you know, sides are getting through them at the moment and they're having to transition off halfback. And they do look good at times, but there's so many inconsistencies in the way they're playing at the moment. So they just need to tighten the screws up, find a chemistry up forward and through the mids that they can lock that ball in. That's their game. They do that, they should pants Fremantle. They really should, because their weapons and their offense is so much better than Fremantle. And on the flip side of Fremantle, you know, third in the comp for intercept marks, you know, Luke Ryan down there and Pierce, yet they're 15th in the comp for playing on from a mark or handball receives from marks. You know, use the corridor from defensive 50, 16th in the competition. Give me a spell. You beat the Giants a few weeks ago in Canberra playing an attacking corridor game. It is the blueprint, Ross. It was outstanding. Yet, since that game, they're lucky to score 60 points in a game of footy. It is disgraceful the way a team can go from that to something else in a matter of weeks. Like, I really can't get a read on it. You obviously go into a game of footy knowing that you don't want to attack the corridor because you're going to get opened up. So either there's two things. You can either think to yourself, we're going to get cut up, or two, we have to go around this team to win this game of footy. But there's not many teams you can go around and beat, like, and use the boundary. Like, those days are gone. It's an angles game. It's a territory game. You know, the corridor is king. You watch a team like Hawthorn, or you watch a team like Geelong, they don't go outside the logos. The logos is as wide as they want to go. They just want to literally pick through the shortest way home. And 9 times out of 10, they'll do that because they can execute it. But I think at the moment, Fremantle, they're neither here nor there. They're just such a frustrating team to watch, because one week they do it, like I said, against the Giants in Canberra. And, you know, they stopped the 9-game winning streak. Like, the Giants hadn't lost there in 9 games, yet they beat them. So how did you beat them? Well, you took it on. You owned the corridor. There's your blueprint. Do it every week.
Just on the Bombers as well, you mentioned tightening the screws and things should be okay. A lot of people have had different opinions of the Bombers. I know Jared Healy last night said on the couch that it might be time to have a little bit of a restructure or a reset of the 2019 season for Essendon. But do you think just a couple of tweaks and they can still be in that top four, maybe top eight contention later in the year?
I think they make the eight. I really do. I think they've got the ability to do that. They're just leaking. Like, their exits out of their forward line are pretty soft. Like, no disrespect to Sydney, but they shouldn't be able to walk the footy out of that, you know, out of that defence like they did on last Friday night. That was embarrassing the way they did that. If they were fair dinkum about their forward half press and pressure and squeeze, especially at the SCG, because the SCG is one of the widest grounds ever. So if you can get your numbers there and force Sydney wide, you're going to get the ball back. But they didn't do that. Mm. They just said, nah, you can just walk out through the corridor like you're on a travelator at the airport. Like Tom Morris walks on the cement, I go the travelator. I'm quicker than Tom. Like, I'm smarter than Tom. I take the quickest way home. Like, he's out there just lugging his luggage. I'm on the travelator.
I'm not a gold class member like yourself, Dicko.
But it's platinum, mate.
Good work, Dicko. Just one final one before we let you go. You were on Triple M doing your spot for Bet Easy on the weekend. I was driving around and James Brayshaw introduced you as one of the best off-field operators during your day. Was that a little bit unfair, do you think?
Well, it was extremely unfair. And the reason he brought that up is when he says off-field, I used to take money off him on the golf course and all that. So I made more money off the field than I did on the field. just fleecing blokes willy-nilly and, you know, hustler. It takes a long time to pull off hustles and I was one of the best.
Something tells me, Ben, that there's a bit more to it, but maybe not for the podcast.
Maybe not for the podcast. Maybe an off-air edition. Good work, Dicko. Appreciate your time on the Fox Footy podcast and enjoy your weekend of footy.
Thanks very much, gentlemen.
Thank you very much to a very fired up former Hawthorn sharpshooter, Ben Dixon.
What about the way he had a crack at Wayne Carey?
Yes, the duck.
And then proceeded without prompting, well, barely prompting, to have a crack at Ross Lyon and Fremantle.
Yeah. He's on fire today, Dicko.
He's going to make a few headlines.
I wonder if...
Off-field operator.
Yes, it was interesting as well. I wonder how...
Similar to you, Tom.
If he's absolutely not similar to me.
That's very similar.
Wonder if he's got an interview lined up with Ross Lyon on the boundary on Saturday night. That will be interesting viewing. But now on the Fox Footy podcast, it is time for the world-famous Max's Mailbag.
In our top, yeah, that was paper. Sure.
Yeah, that's good. Can you hear me, Tom?
Thank you, Tom.
Yep. What? Good.
That's a tiny mailbag. A little baby one. All right, questions from the people. Let's chat about Richmond first. Jonathan asks, panel's thoughts on Richmond's depth being underrated by media and analysts. I think it was Sarah who said Richmond would regret letting go of Grimes, Lloyd, Conker, etc., that they'd have gotten 22 games. Bringing in youth like Stack, Bolton and Ross has clearly been far better. You do have the benefit of hindsight there, Jonathan.
Yeah, good point from Jonathan. I think their depth probably was slash is underrated, but I think it all comes back to system and what they talk about. And you could pretty much bring any one of a few hundred different players in to this Richmond side and they'd be able to fit in quite nicely because their system is so strong and their coaching has great clarity. I think that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah. So we do an article every week on foxfooty.com.au, the team tips, which is where we predict the teams for Thursday, which normally goes up on a Tuesday lunchtime, so it'll be up now. We were trying to do the Richmond team. Matty Barmer and I were trying to do the Richmond team, and it was nigh on impossible to try and drop someone at the moment because they've got Nick Vlostone supposed to come back, Rioli's supposed to come back, those two from injury, Toby Nankervis going out, Ivan Soldo comes in, Jack Ross going out. So there's one player that you've got to drop. And it was very hard for us to find a player to drop. You wouldn't be dropping Menadue after his game. Liam Baker, you wouldn't be dropping him after his game. Definitely not Shy Bolton.
Well, they won and they played well. So it's hard to make a lot of changes.
So we went in the end, we went with Ryan Garthwaite. Probably won't. They probably don't need that many tools against a Hawthorn side that might not have Jared Ruffhead on the weekend. So
even
Garthwaite
though he had one of his best games.
Even though he had one of his best games according to the official AFL player ratings. So,
which is crazy.
Their depth is awesome. And then they've got Riley Collier-Dawkins, their top pick from last year's draft, and father-son gun Patrick Naish, who's coming off four goals from 30 disposals in the VFL. I think a lot of rival club fans would be very envious of Richmond fans at the moment.
But their VFL team hasn't been doing too well.
No, it hasn't. But I think the depth of talent, though, that top-end depth of talent is very good.
I still believe it's the system. And you put that depth in a pretty ordinary club, and they won't be playing good footy.
All comes back to the coach. The coach has been a revelation for that club.
Hardwick not coaching the VFL side.
Correct.
Like, I mean, if you looked at, name one person on the world who looked at that list pre-season and thought, oh, yeah, now Sydney Sack's going to be a star. You know, all these guys that people have never heard of are going to be contributing heavily in big road wins.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Nick Wright has a question about Melbourne.
The D's.
Is there a case that the rebuild of Melbourne as a club from the top down was overblown through the success last year and that the culture and function of the club hasn't reached the status of, say, the Geelong, Collingwood, Hawthorne and our Richmond footy clubs? Or is it more the stepping down of the likes of Peter Jackson and Paul Roos?
Was this one tweet? That's a lot of characters.
Well, so two tweets.
Part of that was a second tweet.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's interesting. The first two questions you've read out have been effectively about expectations and how clubs have exceeded expectations. Melbourne's rebuild, I don't think, was overblown last year. You speak to Champion Data, and I know they're a guide, not a rule, but what Champion Data was saying last year was that Melbourne was an extremely good footy team, and they deserved to beat Geelong in the first final, who might let, like, I don't need to remind you both, have lost one game this year and are looking very likely to finish top two, if not better.
I've heard that.
And they beat Hawthorn, who were an established finals team and finished in the top four. Nothing was overblown last year.
No.
In the end, they lost to a West Coast team that ended up winning the flag and was awesome at home. This year, people expected Melbourne to be better. And that's the general linear perspective among experts, isn't it? This team finished here last year. They're young. They're going to finish higher the next year. But we know it doesn't always work like that.
Yeah. And with Melbourne, they'd done that for about 5 or 6 years in a row.
Yeah, but it doesn't always work like that. There might be a big jump. There might be a little downturn. And in the end, there's no end.
Especially at the top.
It's a continuum, isn't it?
Especially at the top, it's very difficult to continue to get better and better.
That's right.
And when you play as deep in the finals as they did, all of a sudden, then they had the limited preseason, they had a lot of surgeries, all that stuff that's been talked about ad nauseum now. They had all of those issues. And so it's not as if Melbourne was not as good as we thought it was last year. Mm. They were just as good as everyone said they were by the end of that season.
Yeah.
Although, you know, some people, myself included, may have talked them up even more.
And what I will say as well is no matter where Melbourne comes this year, I still believe they're going to be a top six team next year, maybe even a top four team.
Yeah, I think they'll be a good post-hype sleeper, as they say about some American sports teams.
Sometimes, if you look at if you look at an entire core of a club going through an 8 to 10 year period, they have to have these times to then have great times.
Mm-hmm.
Brisbane finished last in 1999. They won the flag in 2001. It can change pretty quickly. We know it's a different league from what it was then, but the Bulldogs and Richmond won flags from nowhere as well.
Is this their Geelong 2006?
It could easily be.
For example.
As long as they don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, they need to tinker things. Yep. What has interested me is they'd made almost no changes to their coaching panel at the end of last year. I think you need to bring in some fresh voices every year. St Kilda made that mistake 2 years ago, and it did not help Alan Richardson of the club last year. Sometimes you need to move on coaches, not because they're no good, just because you need some fresh voices for the players.
Mm.
Fresh ideas, some new perspective. And I think clubs are now starting to realise that's the way to go.
All I know is that a lot of pundits or experts who predicted Tom McDonald to win the Coleman medal at the start
of
the
year. Like Sarah Ollie.
Myself included.
I think as well.
Did you do as well?
Yeah.
He's had the biggest decline of anyone this year, according to the player ratings.
Yeah.
That's what he gets over your Twitter argument with me.
It's like what we were just speaking about with Richmond, though. How many players are... their statuses increase or their status increases as a player because of the players they're playing with.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, there's no doubt that if Angus Brayshaw is below his best and Jack Viney's not playing and Nathan Jones isn't playing that well, Oliver's been playing well, but if the core of Melbourne's team isn't playing well, then those on the outskirts of that core are probably not going to play well. That is just common sense without, I know I hate that term, but that's the way it works. There's plenty of premiership players over the journey that would be pretty ordinary players at any other club, but they fitted into a system and played a role at a very good club.
The question was partially about the club being rebuilt, not just the footy team.
Okay.
What part of that, how has that played into things? Because they did make a change. Gary Pert came in, did he not?
Gary Pert is the new CEO.
Yep.
There was a few questions around that when that happened.
Yeah, there were. I'm not sure how well or what's going on behind the doors with Gary Pert.
I imagine little of the impact of the on-field has had to do with any of that, really.
Yeah, I think the CEO's main job comes between the last siren of the season and the first bounce of the next season.
Right.
Understanding the soft cap, creating an administration which is able to build on its membership, allowing the head of football to put together a football department that can win games the following year. I think the CEO's job during the season, from a football perspective, is largely redundant.
I heard that the former CEO was at a lunch recently or breakfast recently and may have hinted that the current condition of the club or the current win-loss ratio might be the shock that they needed because everything might not be so good.
Well, Peter Jackson said that. Wow.
They are very bad right now, though. They have the second worst or worst percentage in the comp.
Yeah, the fact that they've won the last two games is absolute wallpaper. Like,
neither of them, they're not going to win the wooden spoon, obviously. I think they'll probably be Carlton or Gold Coast, but they are a bottom four side right now, truly on their performances, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's been consistent over the past month when they've had this opportunity to try and bounce back.
Even with those two wins.
Last two seasons, they've finished between 10 to 12.
I don't even see them getting that high.
Yeah, Sarah and I had this conversation last week.
This question starts with a swear word from Poiter. How did you know it was that word? Durden get a week for an accidental head clash, yet a raised arm gets cleared, obviously referring to Gary Ablett and also Nat Fyfe, and then suggested we won't answer because we pandered to the AFL, but I've answered
which you
on
did.
Twitter.
Yeah, you did. Yes, you've been very kind there, Max.
Easy points.
It's because it comes back to the debate I think we have every single week, almost every single week, about the MRO, and it's judged via impact and the resultant injury to the victim.
Yes.
And that's unfortunately the case here for Gary Rowan, who's in doubt, I think, for this weekend's game against the Western Bulldogs due to concussion. And
it was a near perfect bump.
Yeah, it was.
But he hit him in the head. Mm. So he got a concussion and that's what happened. Whereas the other thing we'll say, without going too much into the whether Ablett or Fyfe should have been suspended, a lot of fans do not seem to understand the idea of insufficient force. He did not hit his opponent that hard. And Chris Scott did explain this bumper barring technique, which players use because you can't tackle an opponent who's just handballed and you can't bump them because you might do the head clash thing that Durden did. So that's what they're trying to do. It's a poor technique. So
even the bumper bar seems risky, though. Like, even that's risky.
And it's not the right technique for Gary Ablett, but you have to draw the line somewhere. You don't get suspended every time you touch an opposition player's head. So what is insufficient force? And I'm probably in the minority. I think Michael Christian got it right
with Ablett
last week, and I think he got it right this week.
Right.
I think last week deserved a week, and I can understand why the tribunal said no. And I had no issue with that. And I think this did not deserve a week because I think when Sam Wright got straight back up and played on, that was probably it. Maybe a fine maximum, but there has to be a threshold somewhere. And I think at the moment, again, I'm in the minority, it's about right.
I would have liked a fine for both. Don't hit people in the head. And then the force element, that's where you have to worry questions about if you're judging people based on injuries because neither Shiel nor Wright got injured from their hits.
Yeah.
Things like that.
But I don't mind that assessment. If you injure someone, then you are penalised. So you're taking the risk by performing that action in the first place.
Yeah, but when it's a otherwise near perfect bump and accidents happen and you are essentially saying you've done the perfect process for all of this, but this happened, so whoops, you're suspended. It's basically luck at that point, players getting suspended or
it
not.
It is.
Which is unfair.
The whole system has to be unfair,
but if it's a justice system and we have, you know, a tribunal hearing all of this stuff to make it all court-like, surely you have to be fair and balanced and have a clear system, not just luck.
Yeah, no, I don't agree with it's just luck, and there are guidelines that try to make it as fair as possible.
Yes.
But there are no two incidents that are exactly the same.
No.
Which makes it automatically unfair. From the very start, it's unfair because football is a random game.
Mm.
It's not like other sports, and I talk in sports like a tennis or a cricket, where you can actually compare specific incidents to other incidents and say this is like that and that is not like that. Footy is so random and there's so many variables that I think complete equality is actually impossible.
That's probably
rule 360 game. We've had a rule 360 view of everything, I think, in terms of the footy landscape
today. You've been
good, Ben. Thank you, Tom. Before we wrap up, though, we've got the round 9 tips and the cups.
Oh, yes.
And there's some great cups this week. Lots that you would appreciate, Tom. Our first game on Friday night, West Coast Eagles hosting Melbourne for the Stephen Armstrong.
I was about to say Cup. Stephen Armstrong earlier.
Premiership Eagle?
As a premiership player that was probably bought up because of how good his teammates were at the time. I think he kicked two goals in the flag.
Yeah, he kicked a crucial one late in the last quarter in 2006, I think.
Well, West Coast win this.
Yeah, I think West Coast has not looked that great, so there's not going to be a thrashing necessarily, but they should be a lot better.
Okay, I'll ask you a question, Max.
Okay.
What is a good result for Melbourne?
You're getting within three goals.
Okay.
So that's the line, the 17.5 line, something like that.
And to look competitive while doing so.
If they lose by more than 40 points, the Wolves will be out, I reckon.
Oh, yeah.
Collingwood and St Kilda for the Mark McGough Cup, recently coming off a high of Tom Morris's excellent Anzac Day article.
Now a teacher in Perth, Mark McGough.
Yes.
I'm going for Collingwood only because it's at the MCG.
I'm going for Collingwood because it's Collingwood against St Kilda. I was on the episode of Oz Kicking Around with Mark McGough.
Were you really?
Guesting in the little audience. They have kids sitting in like the foreground.
Who was hosting that show?
Brad Johnson,
that was Brad Johnson and Lloydie, was it?
I think so, yes. Right.
And you're one of those kids?
Yes. There was like a big fish tank to the side.
That's amazing.
Oh, and John O'Broke.
Yeah.
Speaking of being famous lately, did you see the video of the little kid being picked up on the field?
I did see that. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Just have a look at the top right-hand corner. You'll see a bloke in a pink shirt running around.
Surely not you.
I was there. You know, what's amazing about that?
This is in the Vaffa, by the way.
In the Vaffa. What's amazing? It's in Bernard's at the Snake Pit.
Is that where Jake Nile works?
The dad said words to the effect of, I looked up and I thought it was... I thought my daughter was the ball. The daughter was wearing a little red puffy jacket, one and a half year old.
And what's happened when you dress kids in leather?
Yeah, yeah. Just whatever you do, don't look like a Sharon.
Happy Mother's Day to
call my daughter Sharon when I'm older.
That guy as well. Brisbane and Adelaide.
You don't know Sharon in high school.
At the Gabba. This is for the Chris Schmidt Cup. Chris is a
who?
Chris Schmidt.
It's never good when you say who about the cups. That's usually my response internally that I don't vocalise.
Very good Sandville player. Unlucky not to be drafted back a couple of years ago. So the Lions hosting the Crows. This is a big game for both clubs.
This is a really interesting game to me because Adelaide's numbers, they look like the third best side. They have the third best percentage. They're sitting third, I believe. They're 5-3. They've won a few in a row. I don't believe in them yet. I don't think a lot of people believe in them yet.
I'm going for Brisbane here.
And I might tip Brisbane because it's at the Gabba and still believe in them. Their defence is really worrying me, but I haven't seen it from the Crows yet.
Cats and Dogs down in Geelong.
Is it raining?
Not quite, but it will be playing for the Tim Callan Cup.
Of course.
Famously, Jimmy Bartel's Brownlow date in 2007.
Yes. Geelong is a rather good football team this year.
Yes.
So I'm going to tip them.
Mm.
Geelong.
Geelong could win 20 games.
Oh, my God. If we're going to have a Cats podcast, we'll get Ben Castanelli on to play rock.
Am I not wrong?
You could. Anyone could do anything.
No, but I'm saying could in the very realistic. It's in the window of possibilities section.
No, that's not specific enough for my liking to give it oxygen.
Do you want to go through their entire fixture and look at their games?
Yeah, but
they'd be favoured in most of them because they're on top.
You go through the start of the season, you go, okay, so Melbourne, they should beat Essendon. No, they lost. No, that's no good. They should beat Port. Oh, no, they lost. Going through the fixture is the most redundant task of all time. Do not waste your time. Unless you're in Bali, as you were, and then you have time on your hands.
Yes. Essendon and Fremantle.
I just let him have it, didn't I?
Yeah, no, that was
it's like Derm on Saturday Stretch.
Yeah.
Which is always great because he has a go at me and then spends 20 seconds saying, oh, no, but he knows his footy. He's really good at tipping.
Yeah.
Essendon and Fremantle for the Kepler-Bradley Cup.
Yeah. Adam McPhee as well,
actually. Adam McPhee, yes. Mark Johnson.
Essendon at Marvel Stadium. They don't lose four in a row. They lost three in a row, haven't they, Essendon? Mm. No, they're going to win there.
Dicko helped convince me on the Bombers.
Yeah, that was strong from Dicko. North Melbourne and Sydney for the Brett Allison Cup.
And the federal election.
The federal election cup.
Mm.
That's an interesting...
Well, blue and red.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And if the Reds win, the Reds go up
and
so on and so forth.
Who are you going to vote for, Ben?
To win the game?
Yeah.
I think the North Melbourne Kangaroos will cause an upset.
Yeah, I love Brett Allison. You know,
he
wore long sleeves, and I love that.
Yeah.
Premiership, maybe even a two-time, definitely a one-time premiership player, 96. Maybe even two. Yep. I'm going for North Melbourne here.
North is a lot better than people think, and given their win-loss record.
Yeah, I rated them against Geelong on the weekend, actually. They should have won, really.
Yeah.
Port Adelaide and Gold Coast for the Nathan Cracker Cup.
Yeah, Gold Coast does not win in Adelaide.
Richmond and Hawthorn for the Ty Vickery Cup.
Did he? Yeah, just.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, just.
Very much. I feel like you would remember that. It was rather known.
Richmond.
Yeah, it's closer than people think, but Richmond.
And then the Giants and the Blues, there are actually more players who have played for both clubs than years the Giants have been in existence. So this is for the Wiley Jack Thornton O'Halpin Cup.
What's weird is there are more players on the Blues who have played for the Giants than are playing for the Giants. I don't know how it happened, but it's true.
It's quite good for you,
mate. Do you fear that the Blues might get the Giants, who had a bad loss last week, they'll be seeking vengeance and the Blues could be their victim?
I don't fear it. I fear other things in life, such as a one-nation government. But
And death.
And death. No, I don't fear death. I just fear the lead up to death.
All right, Rambo.
I think the Giants will whip them and whip them good.
So we did the power rankings. We didn't really discuss them this week, but I didn't have Carlton last. I don't think Carlton's the worst team in the comp right now.
Who's the worst team in the comp?
Gold Coast.
Right.
I think Carlton would beat Gold Coast if they played this week.
Even though the Gold Coast at the moment have had five games decided by 5 points or less.
Yeah, well, that's part of it, is that those games could easily have seen them be 1-7 with Carlton.
Is Stuart Dew the best coach in the AFL, as Paul Roos suggested?
Well, he said he'd be very much close to coach of the year at the moment. I think it's a little over the top.
He gave him a 9.5 out of 10.
Yeah, that might be true.
In a handicap market.
No, a 9.5, I know it's a handicap market, like a stall gift, but yeah. a 9.5 out of 10. For a coach that, where are they in the ladder, Gold Coast?
If you said the Gold Coast Suns were going to be 3-1, are they not? Were they not?
Or, yeah, but what are they now?
3-5, but they were 3-1.
I know what they were, but we're going to live in the present, and they're 3-5. And I'll give him an 8 out of 10. I would reserve my 9.5s for phenomenal coaching performances that might lead Gold Coast to finals, for example.
Chris Scott, does Chris Scott get a 9.5 out of 10 this year?
No, I think he gets a 9. I don't know. I just think you can willy-nilly hand around 95% out of 100. I mean, an A-plus is a 9. That's good enough.
Had a lot of that in high school.
Who are you voting for on the weekend, Tom?
He's already given his tips. What are you talking about?
I'll do my political quadrant and get back to you.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. A Rural 360 edition of the Fox Footy podcast this week. Make sure you keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.